Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined on this fine Friday morning by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
Good. It sounds like I almost forgot my last name there, Dave.
Almost, but I nailed it down, right?
There are so many Tracys in the world, you could get confused.
There's several of them. I mean, honestly, countless numbers of them on the UCLA beat right now.
Yeah. And Tracy Murray. Throw in, there are a lot of Tracys.
A lot of Tracys at UCLA. We got to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, someone get on that. Dave, there's so much to talk about.
There's great sitcom potential with too many Tracys.
Yeah, yeah. Tracy Jordan could be in it.
Yeah, but like too many Tracys is the name of it.
Yeah, Tracy Jordan. That was his name on the show.
If we pluralize Tracy, do we go T-R-A-C-I-E-S?
Or it's got to be C-Y-S. It can't be I-E-S. No.
Is that just trauma from early childhood for you?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
Like, how do you spell your name? And then I'd have to punch him.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I'm with you.
Dave, I'm going to say it this week. There's so much to talk about. We have so much to talk about.
Tracy likes to lie. He loves to lie. It's his favorite thing in life.
You know what I can tell you, though? This will be the most exciting. So when you all saw Dave, when we most recently, like, you saw his face, you know, at various things at when we interviewed Coach Bob, and you all were so disappointed in his beard. I'm looking at Dave right now, and the beard is back. It's there.
It just doesn't stay permanently anymore.
So how long from just if you fully shave to getting a what would be called like what you have now? That's a beard. How many days?
I mean, what were we when I didn't have a beard? 2 weeks ago?
So 2 weeks? Okay.
2 weeks to make it look like a beard. A week to make it look like I have significant hair on my face.
Okay. That's about normal.
Yeah, I'm not.
You're not overly.
My older brother, Brian, is the most hirsute fellow I've had the pleasure of interacting with. He's the kind of guy who, if he takes his shirt off to go in a pool, you don't really know. You're not quite sure, actually, if he has his shirt off or on, because there's just a shirt of you know, brawny hair. It's
so funny because one time in my youth, I was at a resort with a bunch of guys, and this one guy was the hairiest guy I've ever seen. And these group of women were walking by us, and we started talking to them, and a couple of them were kind of intoxicated and turned to the guy and just said, "Why are you wearing a sweater at the pool?" And she was being sincere, which was just beautiful. Is that about what he's like?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Full, a sweater full, under a sweater?
Sweater. Yeah. He stays warm in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah, you got the good end of that gene pool. You're not that.
No, old. I would describe myself as a normal amount of Irish hairy.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not overabundance, not underabundance, certainly not an underabundance, but you know.
When people ask me about you, that's how I describe you.
I've got a hairy face.
I just say a normal amount of Irish hairy.
That's... Yeah, yeah. Normal amount of Irish hair. I want that on my tombstone, actually.
I think
David hairy. Woods, here he lies, a normal amount of Irish hair.
Or that same avatar of Yosemite.
There you go. Yeah. 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 But I don't have the red beard anymore. That's the sad part. It's a white beard. If it was a red beard, I would grow that thing all the day.
And you're going one direction with that thing.
Yeah. One direction for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, enough. We have no earwax to talk about.
The long autumn of white of red beard gives way to the endless winter of white beard.
Damn.
Yeah,
that was poetic.
Mm-hmm.
So much to talk about. Men's basketball, Dave.
Men's basketball. You want to know one of the many reasons why there's so much to talk about is that they only have one game this week. One. Great big
game. And it's schedule. A whopper.
It's a big whopper. Michigan. Tomorrow morning. At 9:45, is that correct? Am I reading this correctly, Tracy?
You are, Dave. It is at 9:45 Pacific time.
It's good that in addition to the game itself, which is obviously, you know, a big game for UCLA, there's no other storylines that matter about this game. Like, there's no other, like, personnel stuff that, like, you could possibly say, oh, wow, this is interesting for UCLA. Nothing like that.
No. And it was very interesting because after we interviewed two players and Coach Mick Cronin, the beat writers sat around and, well, we talked a little and said, how would you describe Mick's orientation to those questions?
Dismissive would be the most polite way.
Dismissive, yeah. It wasn't like passive aggressive. It wasn't like he was, you know, trying to layer in some kind of, it was just, dismissive, not even just, it was even a little bit more than dismissive. He did it very well.
Do you remember when we asked him over the summer about Donovan Dent's recruitment in our interview with him? And we said to him,
this is the other thing we talked about. Yeah.
How did you talk to him? And like, how much of a factor was Adai Mara's return in recruiting Donovan? And was that a conversation you had to have? And Mick responded with, well, Donovan was concerned with our best players.
Yeah. So there's obviously some saltiness. And I guess, you know, I mean, he's a very, very experienced coach. He's been doing this a very long time. But I think coaches still get some motivation to beat someone. You'd think there'd be a little bit more maybe in preparation on that scout, especially since they know Adai Mara pretty well, on how to beat that Michigan.
I want a prediction from you right now on how many points Adai Mara scores tomorrow.
What's he averaging, Dave? Let me look. And how many minutes is even more interesting?
He is averaging 22.8 minutes per game and 11.4 points.
And almost 7 rebounds and 2.8 blocks. Damn, 2.8 blocks in 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, his conditioning really improved.
I would say
1 minutes to 22.8. That's like a miracle.
I would say, I bet he's about right in line with his average. I'll put him at like 12 points. That because no matter, there's a couple of things. I think he will, UCLA will do some tricky stuff when he catches the ball to try to match up against him. You know, they've got some kind of double where they saw he's got a blind side with the ball. They'll double him from some angle or something. So I think that will limit him. But, I mean, Adai's going to want to play hard and show that, you know, he's developed into a player. And he's just, at certain points, he's just unstoppable. And UCLA doesn't have the personnel that matches up against him. Well, I'm springboarding here, and you can go back to talk about Adai, though. They just don't match up well against Michigan in general. There's no one to defend Yaxel Lendeborg. I mean, one-on-one. So when you're trying to double Adai, what do you do with Yaxel? Because that's the dude that Cronin did rave about, that he's an NBA player right now.
How do they defend the combination of Yaxel, Morez Johnson, and Adai Mara? Like, that's just when you're thinking about this game, everyone. Come on. Like, that's the only way UCLA is going to be competitive in this game is if somehow they can just score like crazy.
When we were looking at the transfer portal last year at Post Players, Morez Johnson was the guy that I would have wanted, because that dude is 6'9", 250, and he's a beast. 13.5, 7.3 rebounds in 24 minutes. How do you match up against that? Like, who does Xavier Booker defend? Probably a Adai Mara.
He has to defend the biggest guy on the court, which much of the time will be a Adai Mara.
But if Adai's off the court, he matches up against Johnson, then I would guess.
I would imagine, which means Yaxel's going to get a steady diet of Tyler Bilodeau and Eric Daly.
I thought
Yeah, I appreciated you just kind of being like, yeah.
On that question?
Yeah.
We need to say it though, Dave. Just because we're communicating telepathically doesn't know what everyone else doesn't know what we're talking about. We're talking like Ben Bulcher's getting in kind of deep into defense, and I said, how has your zone defense enhanced the defensive effort and effectiveness? And he goes, we don't play a zone, something like that. And I was about to get into the details. It's a matchup zone, right? I mean, you start out in a zone configuration, and then whoever's in your little area, the player goes and takes him one, but that's still a zone. But I didn't. But he doesn't want it known out there, I think, that UCLA is playing a zone. And if you notice when I asked Tyler Bilodeau, he's, oh, yeah, the zone. But, I mean, that's very typical from coaches. Coaches always do that. Harkens back to our friend Chip Kelly.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Weak side linebacker. Oh.
What's a will?
We don't have a will. We don't have a will. 2 days later out in the
field. I need a will.
We need a will.
Yeah. Maybe he just actually was thinking about his impending death and was just like, I need a will written. And it just, he was shouting that out in the practice field.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. So they don't match up well defensively, but Tracy, what about offensively? Offensively, certainly. I mean, if Michigan's so, you know, good offensively, they've got to have a weakness defensively. Oh no, no. They're the number one team in KenPom on defense. Do you want to know, Tracy, what they allow from 2-point land? What percentage, what field goal?
Percentage I'll say 32%,
42.8, but that's second in the country. They are 16. They have a 16.4% block rate. That's fourth in the country. They force all of their twos. So this is a really a nuanced stat. Average 2-point attempt distance from the hoop. So the average in college basketball is. Let me see if I can pull this up. Hang on. The average in college basketball is roughly 5.5-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Michigan forces them at 7.6 feet away.
Yeah.
That means
that must
all
be
of their shot blockers are forcing teams to take a bunch of bad jumpers.
So Adai averages 2.8 a game. Lendenberg 1.4. Johnson 1.2. So that front line, damn, is 5 blocks a game.
Yeah.
Over. And Cronin made a really good point. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They've got 6 players that play over 20 minutes a game. Let's throw in Burnett at 19. They've got 7 players that are over 19. Well, Kaysen at 18.9. They've got 8 players that play 19 minutes or more. So you can throw guys out there and tell them to, you know, really play hard on ball defense. Oh, you got a foul. We got another guy who's going to come in and he's fresh. He made a really good point. Roddy Gale, when he was at Ohio State, UCLA tried to recruit him. I thought he would have been a great addition to UCLA's roster at that point. Shooting guard, really well built, just a stud, plays hard, really tough. He started some last year for Michigan, but now they're so loaded he's coming off the bench and at 20 minutes a game. And he's a beast, I mean, as a defensive player. So there's – and then you've got Elliot Cadeau, who's really quick and a good on-ball defender. This is – for me, they're the best team in the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
They occasionally will have lapses – but not very often. It's interesting if you've watched them at all, and I've watched them a lot. They started out the season a little underperforming for how good we know they are now. And the lapses are coming, I would say, less often. As, you know, down the line, all these teams that, you know, had, you start to collect a few losses here or there. Just because it's tough. You're going through the grind of the season. They have won 9 games in a row. They haven't lost since January 10th. And that was their only loss of the season. So Yeah, when I say they had lapses, that means, Dave, they were beating someone by 10 as opposed to 37.
Yeah. And if you guys haven't watched Michigan, they also play super fast. They score a lot. They're 10th in adjusted tempo. They're 7th in average offensive possession length. They're 15 seconds and they're putting a shot up. It's going to be a tough one, guys. I think Mick Cronin's really good at game planning. I think they will find some ways to slow him down a little bit, but this is a really, really tough personnel matchup. Mick Cronin's big on the there's always a way to win a game. Yeah, sure. But I think, like, unless you go full Tonya Harding, I'm not really sure I see it here.
A pipe to the knees.
Yeah. Like, I don't. Yeah, there's always a way to win a game, but is there always a legal way to win a game? I don't know.
She was great, Tonya Harding. And the biggest worry, well, not the biggest, but one very considerable worry. When you're going on a road trip, and this is a traditional road trip for UCLA, where they're going on a road trip to a very cold area and they're playing two away games and then coming back home. There's always the issue of whether you are more prepared for the first team on the road trip because you've had a lot more time to prepare the scout. So how this works is one of the assistant coaches gets signed a scout for the upcoming for a team. But it's kind of a staff wide, contributing thing. They will have a week to prepare for Michigan. And you'd have to say they're probably, a little bit extra motivated. They turn around, Dave, mm-hmm. 3 days later to play Michigan State.
Oh, so cool. Good schedule.
I asked them, have asked Cronin, do you spend any, I asked Eric Daly, I think, if there's any time spent preparing for the second team when you have a whole week and no one game at a time. So Michigan State's really good, Dave. I really like them. So they're going to spend all their time preparing for the best team in the country, in my opinion, and then turn around, put the scout together, get mentally prepared to play the number 10 team in the country at a very difficult place to play. So let's talk. Do we think Scott?
I don't think.
Let me finish. Would you stop reading my mind, Dave?
I'm not going to. I'm not going to let you finish. Not once.
So when you watch 10 minutes of practice last, I don't know what day of the week it was. Did Sky Clark practice for those entire 10 minutes?
He was doing some stuff. It depends on what you call it.
He practiced for every period for the first 10 minutes that I watched yesterday. Just throwing that out. I think he's playing. I don't know.
If there's any doubt about his potential to redshirt from that year when he was at, what was it, Illinois?
Yes.
If there's any doubt about that, I think they should just not rush him back would be my NCAA legal assessment.
Yeah, so what Dave is saying, when you're applying for trying to get a waiver for an extra year, you have to show essentially that
you lost almost a full year.
Like almost two full years.
That's the old way. Modern day, yeah.
They're a little bit more lenient now.
If you can show that you lost a full year to injury, you can get another year back. The issue is
if you've used the redshirt year
at Illinois, he used an extra game. Like he could use a certain number of games and then he used one over that. And so I don't think it would matter. I think he should get the year back anyway, but if there is any doubt right now, he's missed. I mean, it's going on what, 9 games now, something like that. Earmuffs for the hopeful out there. They're not going anywhere or doing anything this year. They're not winning these games with or without Sky Clark, more than likely. Again, you could tell me to eat my words later on. He's missed 11 games, 11 and a half, if you count what he missed of Iowa, the end of that game. So it's a hammy. It's obviously a bad hammy. it's no guarantee he would be back in 100% anyway. I would just sit him.
I think the way they would, but if you bring him back for this, and let's say it's one game where you could continue to sit him. So they apply for the waiver with the NCAA. They said, okay, so we're really arguing over 1 year. He's had personal issues with his father being ill and passing away. And then this season, he has sat this many games. The difference in one game isn't going to do it. I think he's probably in the clear for that. So I don't know if that's necessarily a consideration. I think they're fine. I think Cronin's probably wants him back badly because he would love to win this game. I don't think there's a game that Cronin would want to win more than this game at Michigan against the Daimara. So
I'd love to have someone pay me $75 million tomorrow too. Just as long as we're saying things that we would love to have happen that aren't going to happen.
Yes, but I don't think coaches think that way. I think he'll want to bring him back to play against Michigan to give him his best chance to beat Michigan.
I agree. Anyway.
You're speaking again rationally, which you tend to do way too much. Mm-hmm. Way too much. But I'm worried. Yeah, I'm worried that both of these games could get out of control, but maybe through effort, motivation, good scouting, good game plan, they play Michigan maybe a little fairly more tough than we might anticipate. But then Michigan State, that's the game. They could have spent it all on Michigan, and it's 3 days later. And then, Dave, right after that, they return home to play Illinois next Saturday, which is a very hot team. And actually, in my opinion, underperforming given their talent.
They just lost back to back.
They lost back to back. So you're catching them. You're catching them when they're down, man. They're playing Indiana on Sunday, and then USC. So we'll see where they are, but very, very, very talented team. Top five team for talent when they're playing up to their capability, I think. So that is not a fun team to come back to play at Pauley. Our friend, Mr. Torvik, I think he has them. Yeah, going 1-6 the remainder of the regular season. And our friend Ken has them at 2-5.
Our friend Ken Palm.
Ken Palm. I said, before we came to the air, I said Ken Palm. And Dave pointed out that I was emphasizing the palm.
Emphasis on the wrong syllable. It's a tough three-game stretch, guys. It's going to be a real tough stretch of games here.
So let's say they do something like this. They go 2-5 or 3-4. They end up, right now, Dave, they are tied for 6th or 7th in the Big Ten standings. They finish, let's say they finish 7th or 8th, but 7th. They will play Thursday. Is that what they would play in the tournament?
Yeah. So if they are 7th or 8th, they will play on the third. Actually, anywhere in the top 8, they're not playing any earlier than Thursday.
Got it. This is a new format. In other words, we're familiar with the Pac-12, to be honest.
Yeah, so it's stupid. It really looks dumb if you look at the tournament bracket. So don't do it. Just let me be your I'll be your eyes here.
Yeah.
All 18 teams are involved. The tournament begins on Tuesday with essentially play-in games, the 16 versus 17, the 15 versus 18. Then on Wednesday, it'll be those teams versus the 9 and the 10, and then there'll also be the 11 versus 14 and the 12 versus 13. UCLA, if it's the 7 or 8, will play the winner of 15, 18 versus 10, or the winner of 16, 17 versus 9. What that means, I have no idea. Don't even ask me to project the final whatevers for this stupid thing. More than likely, it's something like a Minnesota or a USC or a Washington, maybe a Maryland, maybe an Ohio State, something like that.
What you don't want is for them to fall to the 9 seed in the tournament seeding, because that would mean they're playing an extra game.
Yeah. Anything below 8 is bad news bears. If they can somehow miraculously get into the top 4, that drastically improves their odds of winning the thing. They're not going to win the thing, but that drastically improves their chances. So if there's a way to sneak a win here, I mean, the odds of them getting into the top 4 are really, really slim this year. Michigan is almost certainly going to be 1. I guess if they fell apart, they could end up 2. Illinois is going to be in the top 2 or 3. Purdue is going to be in the top 2 or 3. So it would be really somehow bumping off one of Nebraska or Michigan State. And to do that, I mean, they would have to finish on a tear. They would have to not, it would not be 3 and 4. They'd have to go something like 5 and 2.
And here's not good news. Looking at the conference standings last year, Ohio State finished with 9 wins. And they were 1, 2, 3, 4. 10th,
yeah,
in league.
Well, UCLA already has 9 wins.
Okay, let's say they get to, what are we thinking, 11 wins?
I would say right now I would go probably 12 and 8, because in aggregate they will probably get one of the ones that we're thinking they lose right now.
If they get 12 and 8, they're probably, if I'm just using last year's conference, they're, that would have gotten them tied for 7th. Anything under that is a 9 seed. So,
yeah, they need. So, in addition to beating USC and Minnesota in the middle of that stretch, USC at home, Minnesota on the road, they need to win one of Michigan, Michigan State on the road, USC on the road, or Illinois and Nebraska at home.
Right. Yeah.
And that's.
And then
USC is obviously the most likely of those 5.
Then they do that. Let's talk about that other tournament. I was looking at
the NC2A tournament, as Ben Howland used to say.
Yes. I was looking at that fun thing. The bracket matrix, which is a pretty cool thing, actually. UCLA is projected to be the lowest 10 seed.
That is precarious.
Oof. 10 seeds play 7 seeds. Which is a tough game. That's not an easy game. I mean, do 10 seeds beat 7 seeds? Sure, but that's a tough game. 11 seed, you're among the first 4. As people have been arguing on our illustrious forum, you don't want, the argument is you don't want to be an 8 or 9 seed, because then you will face a number 1 seed. But anywhere in here, 8 or 9 seed, you're facing a number 1. 11, you have an extra game. So maybe a 10 seed, Dave, against a 7 seed's better.
Well, and the one bit of caution I would provide here is there are 2 different styles of brackets that are, so the bracket matrix is a aggregation of a wide variety of different brackets that are published, like ESPN's Joe Lunardi, CBS Sports and Jerry Palm, but like dozens of these things.
Dozens. I mean, I got to scroll right and it just keeps going.
There are 2 schools of thoughts on brackets, probably many more, but to kind of bucket 2 of them. One is situation as it is right now with no projection ahead, right? Like not projecting even an iota. And then one that's based on projecting, like whether we think they're going to win or lose the next games and how that would fit into the seeding. Those 2 things are at work here. And the thing is, a lot of the metric systems that people rely on to project games are saying UCLA finishes roughly 3 and 4. If it ends up being 2 and 5, or God forbid 1 and 6, this all drops. Like this will be not 10 seed, but maybe 11 play-in game, or maybe out of the tournament entirely. The highest UCLA is right now in any system is, I believe, 9. Yeah, 9 is the highest, and there are a lot of 11s, even right now. So the range is still, like, there's no certainty that UCLA is making the tournament still. Like they've got work to do, in the old parlance of, if everyone remembers the old, the only way you used to be able to assess this stuff was the ESPN, like bracket, projection thing, the on the bubble thing. They've got major work to do still. And if they finish poorly, like if they lose the next three and then, you know, drop that game at Minnesota and they're staring at 1-4 of the next five, and then they have to win probably both to end the season. This is tough situation. Tough situation UCLA's in.
And just to, so you know where this is going, as I said, Michigan, Michigan State on the road, Illinois at home, USC at home, then at Minnesota, then Nebraska, which is ranked seventh, at home. Another, I've watched them a few times. Going to be a tough matchup. Then at finishing the season at USC. So, Dave, let's just go out and no one's listening.
Who would?
If they go 1-6, do they make 1-6 and win the first game of the Big Ten tournament? Do they make the NCAA tournament?
It feels like a no chance there, Tracy.
Okay. 2-5, win the first game of the Big Ten tournament?
Feels like a slim chance, Tracy.
I feel like we're like radio guys from the 40s. Dave, if they go 3-4 and win one game in the Big Ten tournament, what do you say?
They make the tournament.
Tracy.
Tracy.
Okay. Oh, wow. I was just having so much fun with our banner. I just realized what you just said. So
I'm not super optimistic. Their resume is really sparse. And like a 2-5 where the wins are USC and Minnesota and they lose the other five, and USC is at home, not the USC on the road. That doesn't look like a tournament team to me. That would be, say they win the first game of the Big Ten tournament, but then they lose the next one. That's 6 more losses, 3 more wins, 20-13. And when you look at the complexion of those wins and losses, it's not like that's a really just empty resume. Because right now,
2-6 in quad ones, right?
Yeah. Right now it's 2-6 in quad ones, 5-1 in quad twos. If they finish 2-5, that will entail each one of those are quad one losses. I think USC would still be a quad one loss.
Minnesota's fallen to 81.
Yeah, but that would be a win. But right. The wins would both be quad, one would be quad. Yeah, they'd both be quad two. So you're not getting any quad one wins. And then whoever you play on a neutral site in what would most likely be the 8-9 game, let's call it, for sake of argument, let's call it Ohio State. They are 40th in the net, which means, hang on, on a neutral site, that is okay. That would be a quad one. So they would add one more quad one win, I think, in the best possible case scenario, and no more quad two losses. So I guess they would be incrementally improving their resume while adding a bunch of losses.
And Minnesota has been floating around from 70 to 80 something quad. If they move up, what did I say they were? 83.
They'd have to get above 75.
75, and I'm going to quickly check. At Washington, at Oregon, Rutgers.
It all
Northwestern Indiana.
All depends on how much they win by or how little they lose by. Yeah, it doesn't really matter who the opponent.
There's a chance there they get another. If they beat, we're assuming they beat Michigan. There's a chance they could maybe get another quad one win. But as you said, precarious. I think that was the first word you used.
Yeah, it's a precarious situation. Losing Indiana was a really big blow, I think.
It really was. I think that almost, I did, when I wrote that story a few weeks ago, I kind of did a little bit of a deep dive on when you're a bubble team, what, how many quad one win get, you know, kind of get you in? Four would probably, almost most teams that had four quad ones were in the tournament. Three were back to precarious. So there you go. Two more quad wins.
Precarity. Quad one wins. You know what team isn't in a precarious situation, Tracy? The UCLA women's basketball team.
Segways. We love segways.
We love segways. UCLA women's basketball has so they, I would call it survived the Michigan roadie. They went on the road to Michigan, which is the best team they've played in 3 months, and won 69-66. Gutty effort, put it together just enough to pull that one out on the road. Tough environment, tough officiating, lots of different stuff going on.
And just to say, they were up 12 with 2 minutes left.
Almost collapsed, but then didn't.
Michigan hit some prayer threes. But UCLA outplayed that team. It wasn't like, I'd say a 12 to 15 point win was about right if you watch the game. So that score was a little misleading. But
Then Wednesday, they did what they've done to pretty good but not great teams all year, and they absolutely annihilated Michigan State on their home floor, 86-63.
And interesting enough, I did watch that game, Dave, and our guy Jonathan Lee said it was one of the best first halves. I beg to slightly differ. They played okay. They had like seven or eight turnovers in the first half, which is their bugaboo. But they're just so good and so talented, they were still up by like 20-something at halftime. So, yeah, that's what this team is. They play decently, and they can still beat a top 15 team by 23 on the road in a tough environment.
And then coming up, they've got Indiana, Washington, Wisconsin, and USC. If this team plays it all similarly to the way it has played this year, they have virtually no chance of losing any of those games.
Three games at home in a row. Indiana, Washington, Wisconsin. Washington is ranked 25th. The other, Indiana, Wisconsin, are not ranked. And then at USC.
Yeah, USC, of course, on their home floor. UCLA won 80-46 just a month and a half ago.
I think that will still be that's going to be a tough game. I think that will easily be the toughest game that they have to play.
True. They should still win by double digits.
Yes.
So they're going to be the top seed in the Big Ten tournament. They will be the heavy favorite to win the Big Ten tournament and head into the postseason. I won't say more than likely, but as a one or maybe two loss team, if they have to play Michigan again and, you know, it's a tough game. So that is the question right now is UCLA, will they be the number one overall seed or will they just simply be a number one seed? UConn is still out there. They don't have, so UConn, the metric system that we're looking at together, Bart Torvik, they're still the metrics darling, so to speak. You know, they've got the number two offense in the country and the number one defense. They don't have the resume that UCLA has, though. UCLA in the quads, let's pull it up.
14-1 in quad ones.
There we go.
Damn.
14-1 in quad ones. UConn, meanwhile, is 6-0. So UCLA's played 15 quad one games. UConn's played six.
Interestingly, UConn is 7-0 in quad two. UCLA has not played a game that would qualify as a quad two game.
No, UCLA plays either monsters or cupcakes. Now, that's not to say that UConn hasn't played a lot of cupcakes. They've played 11 quad four games.
Yeah.
So UConn, essentially their resume is they've got a lot more of the like decent, and UCLA has played no decent teams. They've played very good teams, 15 of them, and they've played 10 bad teams. UConn's played 13 bad teams, 7 decent teams, and 6 pretty good teams.
And they play in the Big East. If you look at their schedule, I don't think they've played anyone ranked. Okay. Wow. I'm going to go way beyond what I thought. They haven't played anyone ranked since Iowa a long time ago.
Yeah.
They going through the Big East. Oh, I'm sorry. They played Tennessee. Take that back. But there just aren't, there isn't a lot of competition in the Big East comparatively to the Big Ten.
Well, and wins above bubble has become a much more significant part of the resume. UCLA blows everyone out there. They are plus 13.1, according to Bart Torvik, on wins above bubble, meaning the win more the wins you would expect to get versus an average bubble team facing your schedule. Connecticut, for example, is at 10.3. So it's, I mean, it's a world of difference what UCLA has faced this year and what they have emerged unscathed from, relatively speaking. I mean, one loss with this schedule is positively insane. So even though the metrics would have Connecticut as like a little bit better of a team, UCLA's resume is so far above that it's, I'm kind of talking myself into it being hard to imagine UCLA not being the number one overall.
And I would, I think you can say this too, unless they get upset, and I just can't see that happening by anyone that isn't a quad one game. It's, you know, near impossible. South Carolina and Texas are 3-4 in the net. Their quad one games are 7-2 and 8-3. UCLA is 14-1. UCOD's undefeated in quad one. I just can't see. I still think UCLA's quad record will hold up. So yeah. I think they're at least the number two overall and will seriously contend here toward the end to be the overall number one seed. I've watched UConn. I've been watching them lately. They're very good. Maybe I'm biased a little. I think UCLA's better. I think UConn has a couple of players that are damn good, Sarah Strong and Azeef Udd. When I did that story on players in women's college basketball that were 50, 40, 90, UCLA had three. I was fudging on a couple because they were like, you know, 89.9 when it came to free throw shooting. And UConn had two. So, I mean, valid that these are the two best teams in the country. But UCLA has those three, 50, 40, 90. And then in addition, there's that one we're forgetting about, and that's Lauren Betts. I just think they're a better all-around team. When you got Torvik in front of you, how do those two teams compare defensively?
Which teams?
UConn and UCLA.
UConn's better adjusted defense. So UCLA's fifth, UConn's first. UConn is orders of magnitude better defensively than the rest of the top 10. But what I would caution there, so metric systems, they do account for the strength of your opponent. However, the ease with which you blow out a very weak cupcake is different from the ease with which you blow out a pretty good team. And there's, I would love to see somebody like kind of get into it feels like there's more of a wide funnel where like, yeah, when you get down to the bottom, like where it's a pretty decent team that's well coached, you're not going to beat them by 80 the way you might beat a cupcake. And so I don't think at like the wide ends of the like statistical bends, I don't know that these systems perfectly account for that because UConn has played a lot of just absolute turkeys and they've smoked them. Like Loyola Chicago this year, they won 85-31. Like they did this a lot where DePaul, they beat 102-35. They beat Xavier 104-39. I'm just looking at the teams ranked in the like hundreds. Xavier again, 97-39. DePaul again, 86-40. And like UCLA's put some beatings on some teams. But what UConn is doing is I think they're really running it up on the real garbage. And that's not to say UCLA hasn't done that this year. But I don't think UCLA makes it a rule as much to just absolutely annihilate a team. Like the only team that they really crushed in a similar manner was Cal Poly. And Cal Poly and Long Beach State, the two absolute worst teams they played. Everyone else has been more in the, like, the 40-ish point range or 30-ish point range, which I just think when you're talking about the different, like, the far ends of the spectrum here, I don't know how significantly different these defenses are at this point, is my point.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I would think it'd be bizarre if UConn tripped up the rest of the season, going even through the Big East tournament. I would suspect they'll get the number one overall seed and UCLA will be number two. And it would be great if that holds up and they play in the championship game.
There you go. Another UCLA team, Tracy, that is potentially starting on its own championship run. UCLA baseball. They don't kick off. They don't tip off. They'll be having first pitch today. They'll be having opening day of the baseball season today. They are number one overall heading into the year. They are number one in the D1 baseball preseason top 25. They're returning eight kind of everyday regular players, 10 of their top 12 innings leaders on the mound. If you don't remember, they won 48 games and reached the college football or college College World Series last year. They added a couple of high profile transfers, pitcher Logan Redeman, outfielder Will Gasparino, and they are also bringing in one of the nation's top incoming freshman pitchers, Angel Cervantes. Yeah, a lot of expectations for UCLA baseball to be elite and return to the College World Series. I want to say it every time.
You
college
do.
Football playoff. I want to say it every
yep.
single
yep,
yep. time, and I can't help myself. They start today. Let's see, what time is game? You talk. Hang on.
I'll talk. While we're doing non-football and basketball, I'll just mention men's volleyball is ranked also number one. They're 10-0 undefeated. Women's water polo is undefeated 7-0. And they're
5 p.m. today against UC San Diego at Jackie Robinson Stadium. They will also be playing tomorrow, 2 p.m. and Sunday, wrapping up the weekend series at 1 p.m. against UC San Diego. So if you want to check out some UCLA baseball, get out there.
Women's water polo ranked number two. Gymnastics is number four. Softball is sixth and undefeated. And if you've looked at some, if you want to see some just excellent scores, if you like the way UCLA women's basketball is blowing out teams, go check out the softball. They scored, I can't remember, but I think they scored like 14 runs in one inning, the first inning of the game. It was UC Santa Barbara. It was 18-1 in five innings. Next game, Northern Colorado, 10-1, five innings. Oregon State, 12-4, five innings. Utah, shut them out 11-0, five innings. UC Riverside 17-0 in five innings. They haven't played a full game yet, Dave.
They are run ruling everybody.
Everyone. And it's scary. It's crazy. Go watch the highlights. Their home runs are not like long drives that you've got away. It's just, they're like line drives, like opposite field that they're just driving out. I mean, it's craziness to watch the highlights. Really fun though. For you long-suffering UCLA sports fans, if you want to really enjoy some things, just go watch the softball highlights for the first five games.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Football? Oh, since you want to talk about it.
I love talking about football. It's just all cards on the table. We have talked now for 50 minutes. We actually didn't have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, no.
I know.
You should never admit that, ever.
No,
you always say, we got so much to talk about today.
I took some NyQuil last night, too, and I am so tired.
What time did you take the NyQuil?
9 p.m., 9:30.
And you're still tired.
Wow. Yeah, dude.
What'd you do, like, guzzle the thing?
No, I just don't feel well.
Oh, it's because you're ill, is what you're saying. You didn't take it just to sleep.
I'm a little ill. No, I'm not taking NyQuil to sleep. Shit, I'm addicted.
Of course.
Addicted.
It's good stuff, man. It is. I do like a NyQuil old fashioned.
Dude, I was like, my kids were getting ready for school, and I'm just like, I'm gonna lie down in bed for a little bit longer. You come get me when you're ready to go, guys.
Hey, Dad. Dad, wake up, Dad. Is he breathing? Football. We're going in a slightly, I'd say, a slow period. We are in, you know, mid-February. We can safely say, without having the dates, UCLA spring practice will start when spring quarter starts, which is like, I think classes start like March 30th, something like that. That will be, so we've got between now and then, there will be some camps, in March, that they'll go out, the coaches will go out, then April spring practice, and then Dave. They should have a lot of visitors for practice, I'd say, but then they are going to, it's official visit season, May and June, which should be a lot of fun. We'll have, bro is going to be not, I'm not admitting that we haven't covered high school football recruiting that vigorously in the last few years, mostly because we go where the story is, and UCLA football didn't really do that too aggressively over the last 8 years. But now Bob Chesney and his staff have easily offered the most high schoolers at this stage than the program in, I probably, they beat out Mora at this point. So in the longest as we can remember. So it's fun, Dave. We're actually going to really lean into covering high school football recruiting.
Fun. That's the word.
That just makes you feel more tired. Yeah. Dave is amazing at what he does, but we've admitted this before. If there's something that he doesn't particularly love, would it be recruiting football? Like let's say like sophomores in high school.
I think the joy was burned fully out of me covering 7-on-7 spring and summer seasons from like 2013 through 2015. Like there was a period
2 years you got burnt.
No, 3 years.
3 years.
There was a period there where it was literally every weekend from the end of January through the middle of July where it was either the club 7-on-7 season or the high school 7-on-7 season where I was at an event every single weekend for like 5 months. And that burned every last bit of joy I take in any of that out of me.
Yeah. You have like PTSD if you go out there and you see like
taking a bunch those of uniforms of like some random guy they're not going to get. Like, who was it? Alloway. Mm. That at so many events with this guy, Damian Alloway. Remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where'd he go?
Did he? He might have ended up. Did he go to UCLA? No, he didn't. Did he? Let's see. Where did he end up going? Yeah, he went to UCLA for a bit. Where did he end up after that? ASU?
I don't know.
How long was he at UCLA?
Did he transfer to ASU?
I think he did. Hang on. He like barely played at UCLA. Anyway, yeah, he was there in 2016, 2017. Then he transferred to, looks like ASU. I got clips of him playing for B2G at like 7 consecutive events. And I'm posting these highlights and interviews with this kid. And it's like 4 people watching him. And it's like, what is going on here? And that was like peak Damian Alloway. That was like peak Mora recruiting. Anyway, that burned the joy out of me. Now the joy will return at some point.
Well, here's a good thing. The 7-on-7 circuit isn't what it used to be.
Yeah, no, that's why
there's like 2 big things and they've already happened.
Correct.
So there you go. Which is kind of fantastic. Camps are also different and easier to cover. And then the staff can go out in June. They'll go out in early June to a bunch of the regional camps on the West Coast. And then it's not posted yet, but we would anticipate UCLA will have its camp like it usually does, probably mid-June, I'd say. And we, again, will be full force in covering that. We'll be full force in covering the Under Armour camp, which is in April. So, yeah, I mean, y'all should be a little bit excited about this because you've got a coach now who values high school recruiting. And that is near and dear to Dave's heart because Dave believes that's the way you build a program.
It's so, near and dear to my heart. Near yes. and dear.
Yes. They have been doing workouts, as you can see. And it's very fun because on their workout jersey, they have their name. Which I'm sure the coaches need. And we are very thankful because we can identify who, because I'm not recognizing these guys.
No.
We're hoping they have names on their jerseys for spring practice. This is a good sign that the names are on their workout shirts for these off-season workouts, that we are going to get names on jerseys. So that's where the football program currently is. I would also give you a little inside info is that Bob Chesney will be going on an NIL tour where he meets in very small groups or personally with a lot of potential NIL donors probably over the next few weeks at least. So that's all good. That's also refreshing. To have a coach who does that kind of stuff.
Yes. That so that's kind of that he really hasn't had at
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
In football.
And Dave is just rounding up his projections for our offseason look at the roster and depth chart, which is an incredibly, stupidly, ridiculously tough thing to do because
we haven't seen a lot of these guys play.
Oh, maybe how many?
40.
Oh, 60. So that's brilliant of you, Dave.
Yeah. You know, it's a really good idea. Yeah. I mean, I would say looking at them right now, defensively, the strongest units returning wise are probably safeties, nickels. Then I might go edges. Weakest, probably defensive tackle and linebacker. And then offensively, strongest receiver. I mean, you could say quarterback, but that's lame. I would say probably receiver and running back. And then the weakest is tight end, almost certainly. But I think the general takeaway is I don't think they've gotten oftentimes when we're looking at these things, we're talking about a position group that got worse year over year. I'm looking at this and I don't see an obvious one. I think the ones where you could eventually say that maybe they got a little bit worse would be defensive tackle, linebacker, and tight end. But the thing is they're starting from such a low point. Like those three position groups were all pretty bad this year. That I'm kind of the opinion that they probably won't be downgrades. They might be roughly the same, particularly tight end. But I could see a situation where what they have at edge and what they have kind of just surrounding these different pieces on defense, it could be in addition to a different scheme, could raise the level of play enough that they might even be slight upgrades by the end of the year.
I'd say the strongest unit, and it just needs a little bit of blocking, is the running backs. I think that's pretty loaded, actually. I like Anthony Woods. I like Jamie Thomas. They add Wayne Knight. We talked about Carson Cox. That's a lot of talent. Yeah. Just give them a little bit of room to run. So, actually, if you're looking for a good off-season feeling, Bob Chesney's offense at James Madison was a run-oriented offense. So we're hoping they do what they need to do to create an effective offensive line, at least running the ball, and they have the running backs to do that. So
right.
That's I'm clinging to that right now, Dave, in the offseason.
I love it.
Thank you.
All right. I think that's it for us.
We had so much to talk about.
There was so much to talk about. I don't know how we fit it all in.
Yep. We're leaving a lot on the table, but we'll do it next week.
A lot of meat left on that bone. Hopefully it doesn't turn rancid. Hopefully it doesn't turn rancid.
Go get some sleep, Dave. Guzzle some more NyQuil.
I might. All right. For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online. We'll talk to you again next time.
See y'all.